Yeah. Busted pencils fully. Leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Me, yeah, Dr. Tim Slecker, and Jacob, chairman of the board. Looks like any YouTubers out there might, maybe Jacob was fighting with the board. And yeah, where's Dr. Johnny Lupinacci? Hey, he is, you know, right now it's got things happening. So Jacob, me and, you know, we've got this, and
I'm class,
class is in session, Jacob, but I gotta ask, what's that white thing kind of plugging up your nose there?
Well, Dr. Tim, I'm glad you asked. It's a thing called a nosebleed. I don't know if you've ever heard of this in your time in the Hollywood business, but sometimes people, when they do a lot of stunts like I do, you end up having accidents and then your nose starts bleeding. And that old maxim, I think it's something I prescribe to myself, is the show must go on.
Yeah.
I believe that wholeheartedly, Tim.
Subscribe, prescribe.
I'm prescribing it to you because you need to adapt that attitude like I already subscribe to.
Well, I was just thinking about the whole idea of nosebleeds, and no, not a class is in session on nosebleeds today, everybody out there. But knowing that for the teachers out there listening who have been in the classroom for years, we have seen lots of nosebleeds over the years, Jacob.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, lots of teacher responses to nosebleeds that are out there. The one is, quick, get a Kleenex and ball it up and shove it up that nostril because you're taking a spelling test right now.
Oh, I like that one. That's the hard-nosed attitude we need.
You know, or you get the, oh my God, go get somebody because I can't look at that. I'm going to, you know, the squeamish teacher. Right?
I'm looking at one of those right now, Tim. I know you.
Yeah, you can see it. Or my favorite nosebleed teacher, the paramedic.
Ooh, okay.
All right, everybody, walk away, back out. All right, Jacob, head back. All right, somebody go to the nurse's office. I need to get a bag of ice. We're going to get this bag of ice on their back neck. Jacob, I want you to pinch between your nose and your eyes as hard as you can. Count to 10. All right. We got this undercover. All right.
I've heard this.
Okay. You know that, right?
I've had multiple experiences with all three of these people that you're describing as somebody who's had nosebleeds basically all my life. You know, some of us, there's a lot of different people out there, Tim, and some of us, our heads just start bleeding every now and then.
It's
not what you want to be, but it's something that happens.
It is a question I've always pondered. I have not had a nosebleed issue ever. I have a nephew. I had some friends who had that, and it did always make me ask, you know, internally the question of going like what is actually bleeding?
Well, internally, there's something very wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but it just simply cannot be a good thing that my head starts bleeding every once in a while.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and again, having, you know, been a teacher all the years and witnessing it in classrooms, nephews, friends,
yep.
I'm always amazed at the amount of blood that just begins pouring out of one's nostril for no reason other than right now seems like a good time for the nose to bleed.
Well, the lesson that it teaches me is that apparently we all have way more blood than we need. Yeah, so please go out and donate, find a blood drive, because if your nose starts going, that's wasted. Unless you can quickly grab a good bucket and head down to the hospital to help people out.
I wonder if that
I feel bad for the people who are grossed out by this conversation, by the way. A lot of people don't like blood, Tim.
I actually thinking about this again, being a class is in session. Come on. Hey, you're getting two lessons today.
There we go.
How to deal with nosebleeds. But wow. Yeah. Maybe I'm just thinking that the potential that what's actually happening then is for you nosebleeders like you, Jacob, and the listeners out there, the nosebleeders, that you know, maybe what's actually going on is a evolutionary adaptation, as they would call it, because you nosebleeders have excess blood that the body says, you know what, we're going to get rid of it through the nose.
This sounds like exactly what Socrates would think about this. with no really real scientific backing, I reckon it ought to be that you have too much blood because the the fumes within your body are out of balance.
You can see how I can easily come up with this. You know, I mean, during COVID, I did engage in, potential, no, I didn't. I wasn't one of those people.
Well, Tim, you've heard of a bleeding heart liberal. I'm a bleeding nose liberal.
Bleeding nose liberal. Well, Jacob, I'm so glad to see that you were able to take care of that quickly by using, again, the method that I seem to have seen for some of my more hardcore teachers, which is shove something up there and get back to work, darn it.
I'm a hardworking guy, Tim. I love this show more than I love keeping enough blood in my head. And I've tried all the methods. I've talked to the paramedic who's like, no, you don't want to stop the blood. You just want to pinch in the right spot. For me, in the course of my 36 years on this planet, shoving a thing up there is what really helps. So, we've all got our own methods.
Because I'm looking at you though too. If you need to, you know, replace with a new one, I'll let you know that I'm starting to see that, you know, the white Kleenex or tissue, as my mother-in-law calls them, if it changes from white to red, I'll be the first to let you know, just in case.
Thank you very much. And again, if people weren't already grossed out by the blood thing, now imagine the oozing blood out of my head slowly corrupting the pure white tissue hanging out of my nostril. That's a good image.
All right, moving on.
So this is what the
show
is about, right? We're going to
No. You know what? We got a little bit, you know, there just again. So for anybody who's like, how do you treat nosebleeds if you're a teacher? Well, there are three different ways, and we just gave them to you on Busted Pencils. But Jacob, class is in session. School is pretty much back, depending on where you're at. I know a lot of kids will be going back to K-12 from what I'm hearing in my area around here in Western Pennsylvania next week. Monday, Tuesday, kids start school. But with kids starting school, quote, Monday or Tuesday of next week, which typically means then that this week is back to school for those educators. There's usually some form of professional development. Welcome back. Why are you going to be grumpy this year? You know, those exchanges. Well, there's no difference, actually, if you're an educator on a college campus.
Oh.
And I know Dr. Johnny Lupinacci would be actually saying that he's fully engaged in welcome back. And what is it? You know, hey, that professional development that K-12 teachers are for the longest time forever that no one ever listens to them saying, why do you make me sit through this professional development when I could be working on my classroom instead of listening to this high paid PhD talk to me about things that they really don't understand?
This is funny to me, Tim, because it's a microcosm for then what they go do to the students. Now you feel exactly the same way that the little versions of you do, who are like, I don't want to hear this. I have things I want to do.
Yeah. In other words, classroom teaching is really just some form of hazing. That is a continuation of saying that it was done to me. I get to do it to you now.
There you go.
Back to school professional development, you know, what are those things that are the topics of, hey, welcome back. Here's what we should do. Here's something to know. And hey, guess what? We've talked about this topic quite a bit on Busted Pencils, but John and Gordy, who I know have the most incredible morning show, who are listening, A1, as we talk about it on Thursdays when I'm on their show,
delicious, but,
or AI, AI, and teachers are asking questions. How do we use it? What should we do? Educators, Well, I got to witness a professional development session on artificial intelligence and what to do about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what to do about it.
Was it framed in that specifically negative tone of what to do about AI?
Well, and this is before you became a producer, but we've had some AI, we want to say detractors, critics on the show who have, you know, come on, and we've been wonderful to them and supportive and in fact, you know, learned quite a bit. But this term that was brought out to me about a year ago was that this is not artificial intelligence, Jacob. This is merely a computer program that predicts text. It's not intelligent. It's nothing artificial about it. It is a computer program that all it does is predicts the next word in a sentence. And so it's a text generating machine, not artificial intelligence.
I see.
Does that make sense to you?
That does make sense to me, Tim. I can see what they're trying to say. And at a deep philosophical level, there might be a difference. But also, Tim, practically speaking, what's the big diff between if this machine can generate text that is helpful to me in a way that I can't distinguish from Skynet, then what is the big difference?
Wow, you went in a totally different direction off right away. But I know it's okay. But but you asked a question. What is behind that? And you know, I've come to understand now over the years that what we call things actually allows us to then have a vision of what it means they do. And it could then elevate and or diminish what's actually happening. So if we stop calling artificial intelligence, and we now call it text generating machines, it takes away any type of potential sophistication that might be going into predicting the next word. And so really, look, there's nothing intelligent going on. There's nothing complex. We've just got a new computer algorithm that simply says, this is the next best word, therefore go forward. And it is actually a political term, our text generating machines. Not pointing out, and in fact, the validity of artificial intelligence itself is also a construction that has meaning and political ramifications, but so does text generating. And what I've now figured out over a year is that the use of text generation as opposed to artificial intelligence is actually a power move that puts the person using that term in a position that says, and this is why we should guard against this, because it's really just a cheating machine, Jacob. Oh, okay, that's so where I've got.
This is specifically framing it in a way that makes it all about cheating. So we're generating fake answers, or generating essays, trying to make you think of that when you talk about this technology.
Right. You know, takes it away. And so with that then comes so why? Well, a lot of people are still kind of thinking, and again, this is my point of view, my vision, my understanding, thinking that there is a battle worth fighting about stopping, and now let's expand this, K-12, college, all the way through, stopping students from using artificial intelligence because, well, darn it, it's the end of true learning, it's the end of true writing, And if we don't make a stand and forbid it and know how to detect it and know how to scrutinize for it, the world will in some way potentially, I don't know, implode, become some form of a black hole, creating some kind of a wormhole, you name it. But fighting against text generation machines is a battle that must be won.
Okay.
Okay.
That's your stance.
That's actually, no, that's not my stance.
I see.
And it just kind of reminded me of going like, how many of these types of professional development for educators are going on across the country, where we are still engaging in some form of, to me, denial that this technology exists, some sense of inflated belief in the ability to persevere and triumph over this newfangled gadgetry that is going to corrupt the world.
It's a flash in the pan, Tim.
And then to also kind of understanding that if there is still a referral to it as a text generating machine, that really to me what this points out is that there is a real lack still of understanding what really is happening when you're working with generative AI and how it's actually, yes, generating text. Because I will agree and give that the end result of prompting, of messing with, of talking to AI generates a text-based response. Absolutely.
Tim, when I'm speaking to you right now, are these words not simply the result of my observations of my parents talking to each other and to talking to other people and learning what words are properly used in what sequence in response to other words? At the end of the day, Tim, are we that different from your AI twin?
Oh, my God. Jacob, I'm bringing you on a campus tour.
Let's go.
Well, but you just pointed out, the kind of reality of going, okay, you know, in that sense, it very much oversimplifies the complexity of what it took to generate that text.
Yeah.
To generate those words, because
Ethan just told us it's killing the whole planet. So apparently it's taking a lot of work.
It's killing the whole planet. That's a whole other show, because I also did a deep dive into the ecological impacts. Ooh. And again, like anything, we have to contextualize it with real world of what do you mean? Anyway, not today's classes in session, but it's not a text generating machine. It generates text as an output of a behavior that we interact with. And so how does it generate text is the question that I assumed everybody had kind of figured out, that it's pretty complex how it does that.
Yeah.
It's a ton of evidence, training, input, you know, essentially, like somebody says, you know, it learns the entire existence of the internet, which, as people will rightfully point out, is full of garbage and BS.
True.
And it's also trained with every Encyclopedia Britannica that was ever written, every Harvard doctoral dissertation that's been put together. In other words, it has been exposed to every form of humans, as you pointed out, Jacob, ability to speak in either intelligent ways or non-intelligent ways of citing bad evidence, of using evidence in the correct way. And that when you, quote, prompt it, you are not just generating text, you're sending it onto a journey out to an incredible complexity, what we're calling neural networks, that are actually, yes, making algorithmic predictions, but those algorithmic predictions are contextually embedded. And so that the next word isn't just the next predicted word, it's a predicted word based on, Jacob, the way you just said it, a whole bunch of background knowledge and experience that says, this is the next best word.
Can I make this very simple for people?
Yes, Jacob.
Basically, when we're talking about generative AI, you take a computer, you let it watch 400,000 conversations between two people. And then afterwards, if you say, hey, computer, I'm sad, it says, well, in these 400,000 conversations I watched, how did people react to somebody saying, I'm sad? Oh, okay, they reacted like this, and then I'll do that in this conversation. Is that basically the very simplest form of what is happening when an AI generates an answer?
Thank you. That's very simple and explanatory. But I can also hear somebody going, see, there's nothing intelligent about that. It's like, well.
Well, then we're getting into philosophy.
I know. And that's and to me, though, okay, so all of this is we're up on the typically what we like to record for classes and session time is, though, to point out that if we're engaging in still talking about stopping students from using AI, we have incredibly missed the boat. We have very much proclaimed and are going to put in front of our next students how out of touch we are in that setting and how much we have, in my understanding and in the way I see this, how much we're not teaching our students about the current reality of the world that they exist in and how artificial intelligence needs to be understood, work with, complex, understand, dig deep. Why does it do this? Do these things? How is it being used when you are going to write? If you want to generate, you know, it, the whole idea of stopping, catching.
Yeah.
It's no, no.
I agree.
It's because, you know, and I had actually, I kind of pushed this on a colleague today, kind of like my frustration. And Jacob, I will say I sat in this professional development and just observed. I did not animate or say anything, you know, that would point out that I was kind of like going, what the heck's going on here? But I did talk to another colleague and, you know, he made a point that said, you know, well, it's not like we have the resources of University X that is fully engaging their students in how to use AI. Why do you use AI? Here's the best new techniques. And that made me think of going, you're right, but I don't know that that's a defense of saying, therefore, we should then teach students to fear it, to not use it, to potentially, because I hear that if Purdue's, if Harvard's, if University of Chicago is, and actually some pretty big institutions, the Ohio State system now is fully engaging, that we've got an issue of equity going on there then that says those students then are that much more privileged than students at low, you know, community colleges, state regionals, you know, places like that. And so we can never, quote, afford to be able to give our students the world. That comes to me as not really a defense as much as it's an indictment of saying, well, we more than ever, us serving largely first generation, low income, you know, students who are just getting their exposure, should be giving even more than Harvard, and all of those other institutions, because not doing that creates an equity gap that expands exponentially when Ohio State is all in and all those students are getting everything, and small regional of university in state X is only saying, no, we're not going to do any. That is where I fear. And so as we're going into and kind of winding this down, I'm not sure we taught a whole lot going on here, Jacob. A lot about nosebleeds.
We've taught the controversy, Tim.
Yeah. But I put this out as a challenge to say, okay, where and when are we going to recognize that actually a good, healthy criticism of AI is needed. Students need to feel it, need to understand it, need to get deep into it. But a deep critical thinking criticism of AI, you're not getting that by teaching kids to fear it and how you're going to spend the entire academic year pursuing them for using it. You know, that's kind of, you know, so let's leave it at that, Jacob. Yes. And you know what they say, now it's time for your moment of zen. It's inevitable that we've got to bring out the question of the tragic mix-up in priorities. We are spending all of this money for death and destruction and not nearly enough money for life and constructive development. When the guns of war become a national obsession, social needs inevitably suffer. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for Busted Pencils. Class is in session. Yeah, you know, and through Jacob's nosebleed, too. Hey, check us out on Friday for, there he is, Jacob, Producer's Choice, where Jacob will interview the hosts of Busted Pencils, Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Saturday, one full hour of Busted Pencils. Oh, yeah, make sure. And then, yeah, Monday, homeroom. You know, again, homeroom experiences, what are they like? Check us out there. Download all the podcasts. Go to Civic Media. Download the Civic Media app. That way you can always catch Busted Pencils and all of Civic Media. And if you want even deeper dives into Busted Pencils, go to bustedpencils.com, where you can get a whole lot more. And you know what, though, too, Jacob? For blue-collar scholars and producers with no nosebleeds, as we tell everybody, keep busting pencils!